Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We meet here in Philadelphia to keep before the public these theosophical ideas, these truths which are the birthright of all humanity. We do this freely, and there is no charge. For it is stated that you cannot charge someone for that which is their heredity. So this is the birthright of all humanity. We just keep it alive. To do that, we hold two public meetings each week. Of course, on Sunday mornings from 11 to 12, doors open at 10:30. Where we take up a theosophical concept, idea, principle, and we sort of stay in that topic for the month. This is our last meeting on the on theosophy and the theosophical movement, and today's class is about the power of the theosophical principles. Now, beginning next week, November 3rd, will be the three fields and classes of karma. Now that date is also when our clocks are turned back. So we would like to see everyone here, so it's just a reminder. I'd like to call your attention to our periodical, which comes out every 3 months, quarterly. And it has our schedule on there, and it has a few theosophical thoughts and ideas that will help you stay centered during the day. I would like to read to you the reason why we come together each week and for what purpose. And as a theosophist, we all declare this, that the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Again, our topic for this morning is the power of the theosophical principles. At this time, we'll have a presentation of those ideas, and then afterwards, we will open it up for discussion.
principles you live by today create the world you live in now and in your future. If you change the principles you live by, you can and will change your world. We define a principle as a moral rule or belief that helps you know what is right and wrong, and thereby influences your actions. It's also a basic truth or theory. It's an idea that forms the basis of a fundamental doctrine or tenet. And it can also be a law or fact of nature that explains how something works or why it happens. Having exacting principles that you firmly believe in is akin to having a set of rules for managing your life. When you have clearly defined principles, it guides you as how you would like to behave in any particular situation. So what are the theosophical principles? Well, there's three main principles that are the basis for all the theosophical teachings from time immemorial. Simply stated, they are deity, law, and evolution. The first is the idea of an omnipresent, eternal, boundless, and immutable principle on which all speculation is impossible, since it transcends the power of conception and can only be dwarfed by any human expression or similitude. This first principle covers all that every race, people, and religion have attempted to define as deity. All peoples have had and have their own conceptions of deity, and these conceptions have varied in accordance with the nature of their intelligence. What is true of the past is also true of the present. Christianity has its own peculiar conception, other religions theirs. The fact to be observed is that all of these are but conceptions, finite mental idols, to whom attributes are accredited, and that none can be a reality. To render this idea clearer, let us consider space. Space is the one thing which always is. All things and beings exist in space. Space cannot be conceived as having a beginning or an ending, for no matter how far we extend our conception of it, there is boundless space beyond the space. No human mind can exclude space from any conception or conceive of it by itself. The infinite and eternal cause, the rootless root of all that was, is, or ever shall be, is not less than space. The second principle of theosophy is the absolute universality of the law of periodicity, of flux and reflux, ebb and flow, which physical science has recorded in all departments of nature. An alternation such as that of day and night, life and death, sleeping and waking, is a fact so common, so perfectly universal and without exception, that it is easy to comprehend that it is it we see. In it, we see one of the second fundamental laws of the universe. It is the law of periodicity, that all growth goes on. It is the process of evolution. Applying it still further, we see that as morning, noon, and night are succeeded by morning again, spring, summer, autumn, and winter, succeeded again by spring, and again. So under the same self-evident law, birth, youth, manhood, death are succeeded by birth again. This is the doctrine of reincarnation and is a very base of theosophy, for it explains life and nature. It is one aspect of evolution, since evolution could not go on without re-embodiment. Reincarnation was believed in at the time of Jesus and taught by some of the early Christian fathers. According to the view offered by karma and reincarnation, each is his own judge and his own executioner. One's own hand forges the weapon which works for his punishment, and each earns his own reward. Reincarnation banishes the fear and sorrow of death, for as sleep is a release from the body during which we have dreams, so death is a rest and release, after which we go again, incarnated, into a new body on earth. We come once more into what we call a waking existence, and meet again and again the various egos whom we have known in prior births, that the causes generated in company with them may be worked out. Schopenhauer once wrote that this doctrine represents itself as the natural conviction of man whenever he reflects at all in an unprejudiced manner. The more we apply this law, the more do we see its absolute universal application, and the more do we gain an insight into the meaning of life. Under this process, all growth is governed by the law of laws called karma. Action and its consequent reaction, or as ethically stated, whatsoever a man shall sow, that shall also he reap. A concise statement of karma is that it is an unerring and undeviating tendency in the universe to restore equilibrium, and it operates incessantly. This is a universal law, not chance, and not the caprice of any being whatever. Reincarnation brings us to the doctrine of universal evolution as expounded by the sages of the wisdom religion. The third fundamental principle of theosophy points to the fact that all beings in the universe have evolved from lower points of perception into greater and greater individualization. That beings above man have gone through our stage, that there never can be a stoppage to evolution in an infinite universe of infinite possibilities, that whatever stage of perfection may be reached in any race or any planet or in any solar system, there are always greater opportunities beyond. Viewing life and its probable object with all the varied experience possible for man, one must be forced to the conclusion that a single life is not enough for carrying out all that is intended by nature, to say nothing of what man himself desires to do. The scale of variety and experience is enormous. Every form of evolving intelligence in nature either is now a man, has been a man, or will become a man. Further, there is a vast range of powers latent in man, which may be developed under certain lawful conditions. Knowledge, infinite in scope, and diversity lies before us. Although we perceive that we have no time to reach up to the measure of our high aspirations, to say that we have but one life here with such possibilities put before us and impossible of development is to make of the universe and life a huge and cruel joke. These three fundamental principles and the doctrines of karma and reincarnation have absolutely no power by themselves. The power, the tremendous power of these principles lies in the knowing and the application of them by you. You have the power to accept or reject them. You have the power to study them, to learn them, to teach others, and to apply them in your daily life, to be the example you want to be. The power of your attained knowledge will enlighten you to the fact that theosophy is the only system of religion and philosophy which gives satisfactory explanation of such problems as these. The existence of evil, suffering, and sorrow, a hopeless puzzle to the mere philanthropist or theologian, and the inequities in social condition and privilege, the sharp contrast between wealth and poverty, intelligence and stupidity, culture and ignorance, virtue and vileness, the appearance of men of genius and families destitute of it, as well as other facts in conflict with the theory of heredity, the frequent cases of unfitness of environment around individuals so sore as to embitter disposition, hamper aspiration, and paralyze endeavor, the violent antithesis between character and condition, the occurrence of accident, misfortune, and untimely death, all of them problems solvable only by the theosophical doctrines of karma and reincarnation. Theosophical principles are practical, are powerful, beneficial, and life-transforming for those who choose to know them, and for those who choose to apply these principles in their daily lives. From the prospectus of Theosophy, life is one grand school of being, and we have come to that stage where it is time for us to learn to understand the purpose of existence, to grasp our whole nature firmly, to use every means in our power in every direction, waking, dreaming, sleeping, or in any other state, to bring the whole of our nature into accord, so that our lower instrument may be in line, and thus more fully reflect our divine inner nature. Once again, the topic for today, the power of the Theosophical principles.
Well, we certainly have an expression of principles, but we must remember that this conversation may seem like it's about outside of us, but it's not. It's about us. It's about who we are. And it goes back to the very first principle. We are eternal beings, eternal, that manifest from time to time. That in our true nature, all this knowledge exists. We just don't believe it. When our belief becomes strong enough, these truths will become self-evident. That we come to these rooms each week to reawaken that inner intelligence, that intuition, by rediscovering these ideas, these principles, on which we try to live. For if these principles, as stated, if not applied, are of no value, are of no effect, but the cause is there, truth, harmony. Yes.
Well, most people understand the meaning and the necessity for cooperation of understanding and working together. But the problem is the principles upon which they base their ideas of cooperation are missing. Could you point to at least in the direction of those principles that help us fulfill our ideas of working together?
This idea of cooperation, that life if we look at life and we look at the bodies which we inhabit, we are not these bodies, but we use them, which means that we use all the kingdoms of nature, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and we are in the human kingdom. Now, this is cooperation. Another word for it is universal brotherhood. It's a fact in nature. And what man is doing is, because we have free will and choice, does not understand that if one works with nature, one can accomplish great things in cooperation. But man, because of his individuality, thinks he is separate. Thinks he is in competition with nature. Thinks that his savior lies outside of himself. And is constantly searching for that answer which lies within. And it's always been said by every ancient civilization, every thinker, that one can find a solution even in your dreams. We are such powerful, dynamic entities. The back.
Can we add to that, because it was just mentioned about universal brotherhood, that if we're looking at the first principle of deity, that all life is a spark of that deity principle, and that because of that, we are all joined together, and it's the foundation for the idea of universal brotherhood. So what affects one affects all. So we can kind of add that to what was just said.
Yes, you know, we're all from the same source. If you look into someone's eyes, you're looking into their soul. You know, by touch, we can communicate a feeling, an idea, a vibration. We are dynamic. We don't believe it. We just don't believe the power that we have. But the problem that exists, why we don't know, is because we're selfish. And this knowledge is held back. And the Theosophical movement is on the scene to help us discover our morality and our ethics. Where do they come from? Not from an outside God, but from an inner truth, an inner idea of our oneness. Yes, in the back.
So then there are certain values that are corollaries, that are also principles that are based on these fundamentals, right? Corollaries like universal brotherhood, altruism, and this is the basis for the morals and the ethics that applied theosophy becomes.
Yes, well, it's, I mean, all religions speak of this morality. You know, all religions speak of this morality, and they try to impose it upon the people. There's nothing wrong with that. The morality is truth, but its application is not effective. It has to be a self-realized morality, a self-realized ethic that do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It rings true in our very being. That's how we want to be treated. Yes. But that saying can be found in all religions. It can be found in all peoples. You know, the Lord is not mocked. for he meets out just retribution. And that what we put out comes back to us. You know, there's certain truths that we are ignorant of because we live in such a material world that if we don't see it and we don't touch it, it doesn't exist. So what's going on is we must think and consider these ideas. You don't have to agree with them, but for the moment, just let all your preconceived notions fall away and just look at the ideas as ideas with no judgment. Friend me?
In the talk, karma was, it seemed that there was a statement, karma was related very closely to evolution. And in the talk, it was said that the power of these principles is very much related, like the power is the result of thought. So our question is, you know, if everything's within, how does that relationship work between thought, karma, and evolution? How does that work within the individual?
Thought, karma, and evolution, body, word, and mind, the great trilogy, you know, that everything begins with an idea. That's where everything begins. An idea. And the idea becomes a word or a vibration. And then that vibration becomes a thing. This is how manifestation works. You know, and you know, karma. What were the three? Karma.
It was
evolution.
It was karma is related to evolution,
yeah.
And thought is needed to empower them, or thought and power were related to it.
Thought is the empowerment. That is the force behind anything. It's the idea. That's why these theosophical ideas still exist, because they have power in themselves. And that those that come to these ideas and can incorporate them in their lives and can hold to these principles become empowered. But that has to become so along the lines of a moral and ethical unfoldment. That's why we're not taught how to use these powers or even how to gain these powers. We say we have the same powers that exist in nature. A lightning bolt, wind, thunder. We have these powers, you know, to create heat, to create cold. You know, yes, we have all these powers. They're within our nature. But we don't believe it. We don't believe we're that mighty. Because we don't believe we're eternal beings. We're here once and that's it. I'm here now, that's it. Well, it's not it. That's what karma teaches us. What you do has its effect. And if not in this life, in another life. We cannot escape the reality of the ideas that we hold. It's stated that, you know, the idea is like a force that comes forth and manifests. The stronger the idea and the more that hold it, the more reality which it becomes. But because of the false ideas we hold, we live in a world of false realities. That's what's driven us, literally driven us to these rooms. We want to know the truth. Tell me it, I can handle it. Not like some governments that say, we can't tell the people the truth. They can't handle it. Well, if we had these truths, we would be better off as a humanity. We do have them. Well, here they are. Yes?
Well, I think it's a matter of vocabulary. What words mean? We use a lot of words, but we don't even stop to think, what do they mean? Now, on that declaration, what are those words at the top of the declaration? Those are an invitation, we believe. Could you read that for me, for the top of the declaration on the first page?
The top of the declaration?
Yeah, the policy of...
Well, the first line, the policy of the slide.
What's wrong with that?
Well, this, as we read at the beginning of the class, this is the basis upon which we come here. No other basis. We don't have a leader. There's no leader here. We all contribute to what exists here. This is a group effort. But it can only be done through independent devotion. No one can tell us what's true. Only we can say, hey, that's true to me. I think I understand that. And then begin to find out. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. And they're not attached to any organization. And we're loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement. Now this goes back into time, the founders of the Theosophical movement. Now we point back to the 1800s when there were teachers upon the scene, but they only brought forth what already existed that was given out by Lao Tzu, given out by Confucius, given out by Jesus, given out by Buddha, given out by Zoroaster, given out by Plato, given out by Pythagoras, given out by all the great minds. And they just reiterated. In fact, for the first time, these ideas were written down so that we are able to refer to them and study them and consider them. We're not coming here and these words are being presented and no literature, nothing to go with it. And we just have to hold on to those ideas until the next class. Well, that happens. But we have text and we have devotional books that reawakens in us this idea that we are one and that we can do whatever we put our mind to, whatever we desire to do. Behind will stands desire. And if we had the will to do this, there has to be that desire that you want to know the truth. You want to help humanity. You want to help alleviate the suffering in the world. How can I do that? How can we do that? We see that the outward expression or the ways of attempts help ameliorate some of the suffering, but it still exists. It keeps on growing and growing. It's because of the ideas we hold. If karma was embraced, 75% of the suffering would end in the world because people would see what they did has an effect. And it's brought back to us. We can't escape. We think that, oh, well, I got away with that. No, we didn't get away with it. We're playing a game with this material world. We can fool the material world, but we cannot fool the spiritual world. Yes?
The litany of names that was just mentioned through different civilizations and through time, some of those names are used as the founders of certain religions, and so their teachings, which is the one teaching of all of them, the doctrine behind all of them, found also their way into world religions. And so, you know, a student of religion is going to find theosophy in there, but unfortunately sometimes you find a lot more, and sometimes you find that certain ideas have been completely dismissed. But our question then is, it seems like there's a difference between just a typical religious teaching that you're expected to believe versus a theosophical teaching or a theosophical principle, which could be in the same religion. One gets its power from people being told to believe it, and the more people that believe it, the more power a false religious teaching will have. But the power of a theosophical principle is different. Why is there a difference?
It goes back to that inherent idea that this knowledge, this understanding is inherent within the whole. We all know these truths. We've known them from prior lives. We have to remember, we haven't evolved from a speck of protoplasma, you know, and then evolved up into this form. No, we are spiritual beings. We have descended into matter from spirit. We are spiritual beings that have chosen to incarnate in this pain and suffering to lift up humanity and all of life through a greater understanding, a greater knowledge, a greater awareness, to raise up the consciousness. And the only way that this can be done is through interaction with these lower kingdoms. Voila, our bodies. How we treat our bodies is how we treat all the other kingdoms of nature. You know, cooperation, sacrifice. You know, we have lives sacrificing lives for the higher form, and that everything is moving toward the human kingdom, and we stand at the pinnacle of evolution, and we have within us this inherent knowledge of our divinity. And those that can sit quietly and reflect and finds that witness within their very being, that which does not change, that which ever sees, does not judge, it is just presence. That's why we say that if you want to adopt an understanding or a principle, adopt impersonality. Because that is our stumbling block, the personal. We have fought our way through life to here. And what's done it? Our personality. But most of our personality has created as much problems as maybe it has solved. So we're asked to move from that very personal point of view, which we have, which we've been born with, and we've been shown how to develop. So now, look at things impersonally. That it's not about us. It's about all of us. And as the truth being fundamental, we can only see it if we're not attached to it. We can look at it impersonally. That's why we're asked to look at these three fundamental ideas, but to do it in an impersonal way. Many who come and read them immediately are so they become blocked because they have a personal idea of their God, their relationship to it. But it is not outside. And many struggle with that. But then you find those good of any religion who know the truth, that are guided by their heart and that divine wisdom. We have to remember that the pathway to this divinity is through the heart. Read the Bhagavad Gita and you will see it's non-attachment.
It was stated that everything, that all kingdoms either were, are, or will be the human state. And we're told that the elder brothers and the masters are human, they're perfected, that we are perfectible, that they are human. So what are we talking about? What does the philosophy say about those beings that were human? Are they not actively engaged with the evolution of the universe?
Well, we have to go back to what we've been talking about. Eternal, we're eternal beings. So they have to be somewhere. Now, we are told that there are those perfected beings who have chosen to stay back and help humanity on this journey through life. And they carry the light of truth. They are the ones who have again put forth these ideas, this knowledge. So they're there. And we can know that only by bringing ourselves closer to them, studying these ideas, living for humanity, living for someone else, not living just for ourselves. You know, in this kind of world we live in, you know, that's suicide, living for somebody else. Because they're going to take me for a ride. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. But we all know that we sacrifice to those that we love. And we just do it. We do it with not a thought, because it's the right thing to do. So these elder brothers, we do not see them because they live in another plane. They don't have a physical body because they don't need it. That they live in that plane where their communication is done on higher planes. You know, we talk about all of these things in our classes on Wednesday nights about powers that exist. Well, these are not just fairy tales. We have these powers, but we don't talk about them because that's not what's important. We will gain these powers through natural evolution. They will come forth. And by knowing these truths, we can only help those that have developed these powers to become more moral and ethical. So if we always look to the moral end of things, to this is my brother, this is my sister, this is my mother, this is my father. They may not look like my mother or father. They may not look like my brother and sister, but they are. They are. You know, we have contact with everyone that we've contacted before. We've lived so many times. We have a vast repertoire of friends and acquaintances. And people who, like those in this room, who come together to keep before the public these ideas.
Well, we like those phrases, independent devotion. And we've heard the term point out the way. Is there anything in that declaration to indicate that a way is pointed out so that we can do our own investigation? Do they give us a foundation to begin with? And what can we expect if we do not devote ourselves to study in other ways, based on those principles?
Well, we come to realize that through effort, we gained knowledge. Now, where is that effort placed? Well, it's through independent devotion that we strive to understand these ideas. Now, but coming from our educational system, these ideas are foreign to us. They're sort of like the opposite of what we've been taught. And it's a contradiction to our mind when we first come to these ideas. That's why we are told to try to leave aside all our preconceived notions and prejudices and look at these ideas impersonally and see if there is perhaps some kernel of truth in them. And that there are fundamental ideas that tell us or show us that we are a unity. We are a oneness. Everything has an effect on everything else. And that there is an eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent principle that exists within the universe, but exists within us. Now we say within us, but we know it shines above us into matter. And as best we clear our body up, or all our intentions, our motives, our natures, as we clean them up, this pure light or energy is able to enter and shine through all the dark recesses and expose them. The journey begins. Because the only way that we are going to be saved is if we save ourselves. And that is through spiritual knowledge. That we are spiritual beings. We're not poor, miserable sinners. No one died for my sins or can die for my sins. Yes.
Will we ever be able to rise above the personal if we're living in duality, in a state of duality? There's being-ness and there's being. And so we talk about the deific principle as being being-ness. Are we also being-ness, or are we just beings?
We're all of that. You know, how can you rise above all of this? Well, you can do that by finding that eternal which lies within. That is the witness. Find that witness. And during the day, if you have found it, you can commune with that witness anywhere and any time, because it is you. And that by developing this point of view, that you are this eternal pilgrim, you know, we can rise above anything. But if we're not attached to it, if we don't think it is us, impersonal, impersonal perspective. So, yeah, You know, there's hope springs eternal. That again, we can do whatever we want to do. You know, when you were in school, you had teachers that said, "Boy, this is a great class. I love you, all of you. You are so intelligent. You're so wonderful." And gave positive reinforcement and built the character up of each of their students rather than the old way of tearing it down. So, again, a theosophical principle.
The theosophical way of thinking and organized religion. And we were thinking about that and just wanted to add, in organized religion, you're not really expected to think for yourself. You're being told what to think. You're not supposed to question, whereas with theosophy, we're encouraged to test, check, and verify everything that we're being told. And there's that saying that that we say about self-induced and self-devised methods are the ways that we are actually going to take in these ideas and make them a part of our being so that we don't have to rely on a priest or a rabbi or even an outside God, that it comes from within, because it's our responsibility.
Well, I think everyone here questioned at some point, what is going on? What is the truth? Why am I here? What is my purpose? What are we all doing? At some time in one's life, one has asked that question and has led us to here. We have heard the truth from many people expounded. And religion, we have all come from a religion. And we did see the truth in the religions. But the application wasn't there. The teachings of Jesus are not carried out. They're ignored. Otherwise, we wouldn't have all these wars and conflicts. In fact, most of the wars and conflicts, if not all of them, are because of religion. We know that. The differences of idea. And they're trying to kill the idea. It doesn't happen. We are all on a long journey that will never end. When we have come to the end of this journey and on these globes, we move on to other globes, other realms. We are constantly expanding. We are eternal in our true nature. We create the world in which we live. The sorrow and pain we see, it's of our own creation. Stop identifying with it. Stop calling it yours. Build a world that's positive and not looking for the bad karma or that was bad karma or that was because I was bad or did. No, it's an opportunity. It's not, nothing is bad or good, only if we label it that way. What's helpful and what is not helpful? What builds character and what destroys character? Yes.
Well, Grandstand, there's a library in the front of the building. I've heard what you have just said. And therefore, the idea of independent devotion means study or otherwise. study those three ideas at the library Wednesdays before meetings and listen. And the opportunity to devote oneself to these ideas means I have to think about them. We aren't told to do them. I have to think about them. So most of us appreciate the opportunity to listen and to apply ourselves thinking about them. And we often heard that, aha, that's what that means. I thought so. And then from one point to another, eventually, we become independent devotees to the philosophy of theosophy.
Well, we come to these doors freely, and we leave them freely. What we take from here, we do freely. We do what we want. If these ideas are of no interest, we probably wouldn't have come through these doors. So we know that we are all interested. So how do we apply them? That is our great task. How do we apply these ideas? Well, the first place we can apply them is to our own selves. We are asked to take some time each day to consider these ideas. Take a devotional book, read a few pages, contemplate them. Or in the morning, take a seed idea and say, I'm going to put this in my pocket and I'm going to pull it out during the day whenever we have a few moments and think about it. What is this idea? Karma, reincarnation, brotherhood. Just contemplate it. And then before we go to bed, prepare our night dreams. Again, with a devotional book or something that's elevating to ourselves. And read it and go to sleep. Constant effort to make these ideas a living power. And you can only do that by considering them and trying to apply them. Now, we all try to apply these ideas in our daily life as best we possibly can. And that's why this lodge exists. But for it to exist, it's a cooperative effort of time, service, and money. And we consider this a school where we all can participate. So there's no obligation implied or inferred, but all are welcome to come and join in this effort to keep these ideas alive and well in this world today. Meeting adjourned.
Turn the mic off yet?